Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Nazir Daf Chof Aleph. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur will begin on Daf Chof Aleph, 9-3 lines from the bottom. Once again, Daf Chof Aleph, Omid Aleph, 3 lines from the bottom. We mistakenly mentioned 9. That is because this shir might very well continue till Daf Chof Beis, Omid Beis, 9 lines from the top. So be aware, even though we're in the Daf Yomi context, our shir today might very well continue till that point, very simply because we will find ourselves, when we get to Daf Chof Beis, in the middle of a discussion which necessitates our continuing till Chof Beis Amid Beis. 3 lines from the bottom of Daf Chof Aleph Amid Aleph, where we begin, we open with a quote from the Mishnah, Hareini Nozir Vishoma Chavero Vyomar Pi Kefiv Visairi Kisaro Hareze Nozir. Person accepts upon himself a Nazir's vow, and his friend hears him and says, and here we literally translate, my mouth is like his, my hair is like his, and he thereby becomes a Nazir. On the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading which reads, Kabolas Nazirus, the acceptance of a Nazir's vow, Derech Haskoras Evorim, through the mentioning of different limbs or parts of the body. One, we'll see, is a one category is a limb, shanishoma tuliyu bahem. A limb that is crucial for life. A heart, a brain. And someone hears an individual accepting Nazirus, and he would then say something to the effect of, my heart is like his. Would that be Nazirus? And then, of course, you have those Evorim, those limbs and body appendages, She'ein HaNeshama Tvuyo Bahen, that are, though part of the body, they're not crucial for life support. Without these limbs, a person could continue living. So now, we continue with the Gemara, second line from the bottom, with a question. Mishum di Omar pi kativ v'sayri kisar reze nozir. Is that really so that just because he said that my mouth should be a nozir? The Rashi explains that by saying pi kativ, it sounds as if he's saying my mouth is a nozir, or my hair is a Nazir. Would that make someone into a Nazir? Viraminu. And now we raise a source from the top, and we're at the top of Omid Beis, which would seem to contradict that. The source says, Yodi Nazira, Viragli Nazira. Lo amar klum. If a person says, my hand should be a Nazir, or my leg should be a Nazir, he has said nothing. Tosfos at the top, Yodi Nazir, Vuadin Bemas Nisan. Likewise, with regard to the Mishnah, Ilo Omar, Pi Kepiv, Ela Pi Nazir, Visairi Nazir, Lo Omar Klum, Dein Haneshoma Tuliyabo. If he didn't say Pi Kepiv, rather he said, my mouth should be a Nazir, my hair should be a Nazir, he has said nothing. Lips, for example, which constitute the borders of one's mouth, one's lips or one's hair are not life supporting organs. Let's continue in the Tanaic source. Roshi Nazira, Kevedi Nazira, Hareza Nazir. If he says, my head should be a Nazir, or my liver should be a Nazir, well, that makes a person a Nazir. He will be a Nazir if he says that. Ze HaKlal, the following rule can be stated. Dovor Shanishoma Tluya Bo, Hareza Nazir. If a person declares a limb of his body that is upon which life depends, he will become a Nazir. We glance at Rashi at the top. For Amini V'chula Ze HaKlal, Upeveser Lo Havi Dovor Shanishoma Tluya Bo. A hair or lips do not constitute a life-based organ. The guy is the seir v'chotich leniv svasayim lomayas. If he cuts off his hair, he cuts off his lips, he won't die. Therefore, we have to try to understand the Mishnah where he said pi kapiv and sairi kesairo, he does become a nazir. How is that to be understood? The Gemara answers, Omar of Yehuda, the Omar Hachi. What he said in the Mishnah is Ya'aseh pi kepiv V'sairi kesairo milaguz. Oh, let me read that again. I skipped an important word. Ya'aseh pi kepiv miyayin. Let my mouth be like his mouth with regard to wine. And since he heard his friend accept Nazirus, and he said, I want my mouth to be like his mouth with regard to wine, he becomes a Nazir. Namely, our Mishnah is in contrast to this Tanaic source that we quoted at the top, where there was no Nazir in the background. In the source we read at the top, the speaker was the initial speaker. There wasn't a previous regular Naziris acceptor. So if you pop out of the blue and say, I want my hand to be a Nazir, you've said nothing. In the Mishnah, there was a person who was a speaker, a person who had accepted upon himself Naziris previously. You come along and say, I want my mouth to be like his mouth with regard to wine, or my hair like his hair, miloguz, with a hair cutting restriction. Miloguz means not to cut it, and you're basing yourself on a nazir who already accepted nazirus, so then that is binding. If you're an initial speaker and you say my hand should be a nazir, my leg should be a nazir, you've said nothing. However, under circumstances like that, if you make reference to an Aver Shehaneshoma Tuliabo, a life-essential limb, then even though there's no previous speaker, but if you say you want your heart to be a Nazir, you're essentially saying you want yourself to be a Nazir. The Gemara continues, again a quote from the Mishnah, Hareini Nazira V'shoma Bailov Yomar Vani, Eino Yochol Lahafer. A woman initiated the Nazirus. She said, I want to be a Nazir. The husband heard that and said, Vani, and I too. So he cannot undo the Nazirus. He can't be Mefer, his wife's Nazirus. Why that is so? So as we go on in the Gemara, we'll touch on that more. On the side, we have a topic heading, and here you can see we indicate ad chof beis amid beis. We have one topic that lasts till chof beis amid beis, hence the need for us to continue beyond the standard dafyomi quota in order to avoid stopping in the middle of a discussion. The topic reads, Baal me'aker okar me'ikoro, when a husband absolves his wife of her vows on the day that he heard his wife vow. So the Torah has a provision that a husband can remove, can erase, can void, absolve her of that vow. When he does so, does that constitute an absolution from the very source, from the initial point that she vowed? Or is it an absolution only from the day that he issues his objection to the vow, his hafora? You could have a situation where the woman had vowed in private many days before, or in front of other people, and the husband became aware of it many days later. If upon his becoming aware of it, that very same day that he becomes aware of it, he is mefer, so the vow that his wife took is absolved. But as we said, does it work retroactively to the point that she made the vow initially, or is it an absolution from only the time of the absolution onwards? Nafka mina, there would be a practical difference between these two sides of analysis. Beisha shenozra, a woman who had taken upon herself nazirus, beoimra ve'ani, where a second woman or a second person, after hearing the woman's vow, the second woman said, "Vani achrei shishoma rishona nazirus." After she heard the first woman make the nazirus vow, v'shoma bailo shel rishoni v'hofer, and then the husband of the first woman absolves her of the vow. Ma din hashniya? What will the law be regarding that second woman who had said va'ani? If you say that the absolution works in a retroactive fashion to the very beginning, that would mean that the initial woman had no vow. It was uprooted. It didn't exist. And when we say it didn't exist, in halachic terms, it didn't exist. It may very well be that she observed her vow for the several days until the husband heard of it, until the husband got wind of it. Nevertheless, the side of analysis says me'aka okar, that the husband uproots it from its very origin. That means, in halachic terms, there was now retroactively no vow. If there was no vow, so there was nothing for the second woman to attach herself to link upon, and hence the second woman would be without a nazir's vow as well. If, however, you say that it's megas gaias, that the husband's absolution works only from the time of hearing of the vow onwards, and the friend had linked herself to the vow earlier, so the linkage works, it binds the second woman. The second woman remains bound, and the fact that the husband of the first woman absolves her of the vow from now onwards, that's a private matter between the husband and the wife. Or more specifically, the first woman from this point on has no vow. But the second woman who had linked into the first woman's vow previously, she remains bound. So now that's the opening question of the Gemara. So you take note of the fact that when we turn to the Gemara text, you notice a long question marking. Following that, you'll notice triangles. If you skim down the page, you'll notice triangles appearing in two different directions. And under our Mivneh heading, we explain the triangles, but even before we look at the Mivneh, scroll ahead or turn ahead to Daf Chof Beis. You see on Chof Beis, Amud Aleph, the triangle marking scheme continues. Again, you'll see them appearing in two different directions. This discussion, as we mentioned earlier, continues to Daf Chof Beis, Amud Beis. On on the side, the Mivneh, where you see the triangle, we highlight the expression Toshma, with the point facing up, Lekivun Me'aka Okar. These will be attempts to show that the husband's absolution is a retroactive one. And the inverted triangle, Lekivun Megiz Gaias, an attempt to show that it's only from the point of absolution onwards that the vow is erased. When you notice the double underline, you'll see that the word le'olam is is featured, or later on, the equivalent thereof, went on Chof Beis Amud Aleph. The double underline represents dechia, a rejection of whatever was trying to be proven. Now the Gemara, hopefully the sugya has been mapped out. Ibaya leho, baal me'aka okar, when a husband is mefir, as the Mishnah said, einu yochol lehofer, regarding a case where the woman initiated the vow and the husband said, Vani, we said he cannot be mefir. Here the Gemara is opening up with a general question. When a baal is mefir, is he mefir in a retroactive fashion? Me'akokar means uproots it from its very source. Oidilmop megiz gayez, or possibly he cuts it off from the point of absolution onwards, but retroactively, we do not say there's absolution in a retroactive fashion. L'may nafka, meaning what practical difference would there be to this? L'isha shenodra b'nazir v'shomo chaverto v'yomra v'ani. A woman who had accepted Nazirus, a second woman, her friend comes and says, I too. V'shomo b'ayla shel rishona v'ofir lo, and the husband of the first woman comes along and is mefir, he absolves his wife of her vow. E amris me'aka okar, if you say that the absolution is retroactive, is uprooting it from its source, hahi nami ishtaroi, the second woman is also then released from her vow. If there was no first vow, then there was no vow upon which the second woman could have linked herself. Viamris megis gaias, if you say, however, the absolution is from the point of absolution onwards, but not retroactively, then ihi ishtaroi, the first woman, the wife, is released from this point onwards, chaverta asira, but the second woman who had linked into a previously existing vow remains bound. My. So the question is, what is the din? Toshma. We introduce a source. In fact, our Mishnah, the quote we saw before, and this is an attempt to show that the husband would be mefir, be absolving in a retroactive fashion. Hareini Toshma, Hareini Nazira, a woman accepted upon herself Nazirus, Vishoma Bailo Vyomar Vani, and the husband heard it and he said, I too, Eino Yochol Lahofer. The husband cannot absolve that vow. By the husband saying Vani, so he in effect is confirming the wife's vow and saying an I too. If he were to be, let us say, successful in this, if you were to say, let us say, he could be mefir, you know what in effect would be happening? He would be undoing his own vow, and a person cannot do that, because by undoing the wife's vow, he's in effect undoing his own. So we ask, as we point out, the Isalka Daitach Baal Megiz Gayiz, if it were so that a husband can undo, or when he undoes it, he undoes it only from the time of hearing of it, from this point onwards, only from the point that he issues the absolution onwards, but not retroactively. Lefer leishto, let the husband be mefir his wife's vow, v'hu litzar, and he will remain bound. After all, he said Vani before there was any absolution. The wife's vow was still intact. That is, of course, if you would have accepted or taken the position of Baal Megiz Gayiz. But you see, he cannot absolve her of the vow. Shma mino Baal Me'aker Okar. This, therefore, shows us that the husband's absolution is one that is retroactive. And that would mean that in his absolution, he would be uprooting the wife's vow from its very origin. And if that were to have happened, he would have in effect been undoing his own vow, and a person cannot undo one's own vows. We have the Xeris Akosov says lo yachel dvoro, that one cannot undo one's own vows, but others can undo it. One approaches a chacham, a beis din, they can undo a person's vows. So from the fact that the Mishnah teaches that a husband who had said vani would linked into his wife's nazirus, the fact that he cannot absolve is an indication to us that absolution in general works in the retroactive fashion. Loi, that's not the analysis. Leoilo megis gaius. I will tell you that in general, absolution is effective only from the point it is made, not retroactive. Ubedinu delay for law, and technically speaking, this husband should have been able to been mefer. Here, however, he cannot for a technical reason. Vahainu time de lo motzi mefer. Here, the reason he cannot absolve. Kevon diomar lo vani, since the husband said, and I too, keman domar kin lifidomi. It's as if he confirmed her vow. When a husband confirms his wife's vow, so it becomes, we'll say, totally binding. Can the vow be undone from that point onwards? Well, one way is the woman could go to a chacham or a beis din to have it undone. There's another possibility, and that is what the Gemara says now. E mitchil akamasa motzi mefer. If the husband would approach a chacham on his own, trying to reverse or erase the hakoma, his confirmation of her vow, motzi mefer, he can still undo it. And I believe that this is true only if it's all done on the same day that he hears the vow. In other words, if a husband hears of his wife's vow, confirms it, and then on that same day goes to a chacham to have it undone, so it can be undone. V'ilo, lo motzi mefer. If not, the husband, after having confirmed it, he cannot absolve it. So just to review the point, in general, a husband's hafora might very well be from the point of absolution onwards. In the Mishnah scenario, where the husband had heard his wife's vow and said, Vani, and I too want to be a nazir, he cannot be mefer only because his statement of Vani is equal to the confirmation, a hakoma, of his wife's vow, and that prevents the husband from a straightforward hafora. Toshma. We now introduce a Tanaic source, which will initially indicate to us that a husband is mefer only from absolution onwards and not retroactively. The source says, Ha'isha shenodra b'nazir, a woman accepted nazirus, ve'frisha es behemta, and set aside the animal required for the nazir sacrifice at the end of the nazirus period. A nazir must bring sacrifices. So she set aside the required sacrifices, v'achak u'hofer lo baila, and afterwards, after she set aside the animal, her husband was mefer the neder, the nazirus. Im shelo hoisa behema, teitzei v'tira be'eder, if the animal belonged to him, so the animal goes free to graze as a regular, mundane animal in the herd. V'im shelo hoisa behema, if the animal belonged to her, hachatos tomus, the Korban Chatos, amongst the different offerings that a Nazir brings, is a sin offering. That is in addition to the Oilop and the Shlomim that a Nazir brings. V'i Salka Daitach Baal Neka Okar. If you were to think that the husband's absolution is retroactive, meaning that there really was no vow to begin with, then the animal, though owned by the wife, that she had dedicated as a chatos should go free, should go return to being a mundane, non-sanctified animal. Elolav shmamino baal megiz gaius. So rather, it must be that we should conclude that the husband's absolution is only from the point of hearing of the vow onwards. And since that's the case, so the korban chatos that was set aside as a chatos, it's now not necessary. So it, as the rule goes, it is to die. Li'olam e'moloch baal me'aka okar. I'll tell you that in general, a husband's annulment of his wife's vow is retroactive. You'll ask, well, what about the behemoth, the chatos? Why doesn't it go free? Why doesn't it become, we'll say, unsanctified? For hainu taimo. The reason the sin offering is set aside to die, kevon ditzricho kapora, since the woman needs atonement. You'll ask, why does she need atonement? Well, the husband absolving, as we're saying now, even though it's uprooting it from the origin, technically speaking, till he issued his absolution, she had deprived herself from wine. She didn't know he was going to absolve it from when she made the vow. When she made the vow, she was serious about it, and she was observing Nazirus. True, halachic Nazirus is uprooted from the origin, but on a practical basis, she had deprived herself from wine. And we have learned in the past, based on the opinion of Rabbi Elazar HaKapor, that self-imposed deprivation, when you're depriving yourself from items that are ordered, that are otherwise allowed, is something that's considered sinful. So she committed a type of sin by being mitzayir atzma, by restricting herself from wine. And therefore, havis kechatos shemesu balea. Since we're dealing with a woman that needs atonement, in the, we'll say, in the general sense of the word, as opposed to true Nazirus atonement, because we said that the Nazirus vow was absolved, but she needs atonement, and a korban chatos, a sin offering, as its name indicates, is for atonement purposes. A rule that's based on an oral tradition, halacha Moshe Mi-Sinai, there are certain cases that a sin offering is set aside to die. So here we have a case of an animal that was set aside as a sin offering, and the owner, in a manner of speaking, will say, this case is parallel to the case of an owner of a sanctified sin offering that the owner died. That's called chatas shemesuba. In this case, the owner, vis-a-vis the need for bringing it, i.e. the nazir vow, became non-existent. So it's like chatas shemesuba leo ugmiri. And we have an oral tradition, the chatas shemesuba leo tomus, that sin offerings whose owner died, the animal is set aside to misa, to die, not to be used as a sacrifice, nor is it going to return to its chulin, mundane status. Toshma, again, we try to prove, and in this case, like we did in the previous attempt, try to prove that the husband is megiz gaius. And we didn't point this out earlier, but you can see the markings that we've been using. We have dashed underline and a squiggle underline. The dashed underline highlighted what is not going to be proven initially. The squiggle underline highlights that which we think we've proven. So that in the first triangle with the point facing up, you can see shortly thereafter there was a squiggle underline, Shmamino Baal Me'akokar. In two, And now in 3, you'll see the squiggle underlining is Shma Mino, that Baal Megiz Gaius. So we continue now with triangle number 3. Toshmal, Isha Shinoja bin Nazir, Vahoisha Shoisiyayan, Umetamala Mason, a woman who accepted Nazirus and was drinking wine and defiling to the dead, like doing everything wrong. Harezu Sofegis Isra'ar Boyim. This is a Mishnah that will appear on Daf Chof Gimel. The Mishnah basically seems to be telling us the obvious. Hey Chidomi, what are the circumstances behind this Mishnah quote? Ilema de lo ofer lo baal. If it's a case where the husband didn't absolve her of the vow, Tzricha la meimar, do I need to waste, so to speak, a Tanaic source for information that is so obvious? It would be obvious that a woman who became a Nazir, no vow absolution, and she went ahead and violated all the rules of Nazir, she's subjecting herself to Soifegas Arbaim, to getting lashed, the 40 lashes. Ela pshita de'efer lo baal. Rather, it's obvious then that the quote we just saw is a case where the woman's husband absolved her of the vow, that he was mayfair it. If you were to think that the absolution is a retroactive one, why would she be subjected to the 40 lashes? There was no vow. So it must be that the husband's absolution is only from the point of the actual absolution onwards. But prior to that, there was a vow and she was violating it. That's why the Mishnah says she's subjected to the 40 lashes. The Gemara rejects this. Li'olam, Eim Olach. I can tell you that in general, Baal Me'akar Okar, that a husband, in fact, does uproot it from its origin. And the quote we just saw was, yes, the obvious. The Baal was not Mefer, and she went ahead and violated her Nazirus. He'll ask, why does the Mishnah teach me the obvious? Umishum dekotoni seifa. It was, in effect, a lead-up to the continuation of the Mishnah, which says as follows. Hefer law by law, and that is the reason we have in the Reisha the contrast. There was no hafara in the Reisha. Now, the Seifa speaks about a woman who had vowed to be a Nazira, and the husband did absolve her of the vow. V'hi lo yoda, and she was unaware of the husband's absolution. And after his absolution, and I emphasize, after his absolution, actually, let me reverse that. That's unnecessary at this point. Simply, he absolved her of the vow, and she was drinking wine and defiling herself to the dead. Eino soifeges esar boyim. She is not subject to lashes. So that you have a woman who might very well have been violating her Nazirus from the outset. That's why I wanted to retract what I said initially. She had been violating from the outset. The husband absolved her of the vow. She is not subject to lashing. Now, because we have the Seifa that speaks about the husband being mefer, we continue at the top of Chof Beis, Tona Nami Reisha Sofeges. The Reisha spoke about being lashed, we'll say, in contrast to the Seifa case, where where the husband absolved her, she's not subject to the lashing. Therefore, the ratio speaks about a case where the husband had not absolved whatsoever, and she is subject to the lashing. There's no chiddush in the ratio per se, but as we said, it was taught only as a lead up and a way of contrasting it with the Seifa. In the Seifa, though, we have a major chiddush, and that is that you have a case of a woman vowing to be a Nazira, and she went ahead and violated the Nazirus. But if the husband absolves her of it, she is not subject to any lashing. And that is a result of the husband's hafora, which in fact could very well be mea ka'okar. And the real manifestation of mea ka'okar is the case of the woman who was violating her nazirus before the husband actually issued the absolution. He subsequently issues an absolution, and we say that she's not subject to any lashes, which is a clear demonstration of the husband's retroactive powers in absolution. The Tosfos adds another point, and that is that the Seifa has significance in the sense that it's here to the exclusion of the opinion of another Tana, Rebbe Yehuda, who says that if a woman had vowed and the husband was mefer, she is subject to rabbinic lashings, makis mardis, meaning even though the husband's abilities are retroactive, but something wrong happened as far as the woman is concerned. So even though on a technical Torah level nothing wrong took place, the rabbis, according to Rabbi Yehuda, insist on her getting lashed. This source, which appears before Rabbi Yehuda, this source says she does not get even the rabbinic lashing. Ta Shema. So here you can see a fourth attempt. A triangle with the point facing upwards. Again, an attempt to show that the hafora is me'akir okar, is one that is retroactive. So at the top line of Chof Beis Omer Aleph, Toshma Isha Shenodra V'Nozir V'Nitmeis V'Achaka Chofer Lo Baila, a woman who had accepted Nazirus became defiled, and then the husband absolved her. The standard Nazir that becomes defiled brings three sacrifices: a chatas, an oila, and an osham. An osham is an animal offering. In this case, the chatas and the oila are bird offerings. If it were so that the husband's absolution is only from the point of absolution onwards, Taisi Nami Oila Sa'of, well, this woman should then bring the Oila Sa'of as well. After all, you have a woman that had been in a zero and became defiled. V'elomai. So, what do you want to say? Me'akir Okar. That there is an uprooting from the very outset. Chatasof nami lo taisi. So let her not bring the sin offering either. Just like the oilasof she is released from, let her be released from the chatasof as well. The Gemara's response is that I will tell you in general, the husband is me'akir okar, uproots it from the source. You're asking, why is the chatas of brought? Hachinami, this too, as we've explained before, v'ho moni Rebbe Elozer hakapor hi. The hachinami means, in fact, the husband is oiker from the very source, and the reason for the chatas sin offering being brought here is because this is in accordance with Rebbe Elozer Kapor, who is featured now in this upcoming source that we referred to earlier, that holds the mere self-imposed restraint from allowed things is problematic, is sinful. So in that sense, because of the sinfulness aspect of her behavior, there is room for a sin offering in this scenario. Desanya, Reb Elozer Akapor Bribi, the great Rabbi Elazar HaKapur Omer, Ma Tamud Lomar Me'asher Choto Al HaNefesh. The Pasuk makes reference to the sin having been committed by the Nazir. V'chibezo Nefesh Choto Zeh. What sin did the Nazir commit that the Pasuk has to make reference to a sin? Because he restricted himself from wine, he is called a sinner. From this we can make kalva, we can suggest kalva chomer logic. Mind you, the Torah refers to the nazir as a sinner. And what did he do? He restricted himself from wine. He didn't restrict himself from hamburgers or from cake. And yet, for the self-imposed restriction of wine alone, he's called a sinner. Someone who restricts himself from all things, all the more so, they would be termed a sinner. So with that in mind, we understand why, even though the husband uproots from the very origin, why the source says that she brings a chatas ha'of. We continue in the Gemara, Toshma desanya behedya. Here we have what appears to be a clear proof that the husband is Megiz Gaiz. Ho'isha Shenodra Benozir. Vishoma Chaverta Vamravani. A woman accepted Nazirus. Her friend hears it and says, I too will bo bailo shel rishonu v'hofer lo. And the husband of the first woman comes and absolves his wife's vow. He muteris, the wife is free, the chaverta asurav, and the friend remains bound. Now, according to the Bach Skirsa, we continue reading Rabbi Shimon Oimer. We skip the bracketed section momentarily. Rabbi Shimon Oimer, im omro la hareini kimoseich, if the friend says, I am like you, shtehen mutaros, then by the fact that the friend, patterned herself. We used to use the term carbon copied herself after the first woman with the absolution enjoyed by the first woman. The second woman's vow would also be released. From the source, especially from what the Tanakhama said, we see very clearly, Shma Mino Baal Megiz Gaiz. We see from here that the husband's absolution powers are from that point onwards, but not retroactively. And that having been said, we understand why Chaverta Asura, why the second woman remains Asura. We continue at the top of Chof Beis Amid Beis, and we have to point out that the next couple lines of Gemara, in other words, the point of the next Gemara, is really the subject of quite a bit of, disagreement amongst the Gemara commentaries. We're going to choose one approach, and that approach we will see together when we learn the Rosh commentary. That having been said, though, one should be aware that there are other approaches. Before we get into the Gemara text itself, we have a topic heading, and it reads as follows: Ha'in nitan lifsho shelosos shiromi barchama. We have in brackets a statement, and then afterwards misug yosenu. Is there room to conclude Romi Barchama's question from our sugya, from our topic? Now, what was Rami Barchama's question? So in the brackets, Be'inyin ha'imer ha'reolai kibisar zebach shlomim. If a person is sitting in front of a mutter substance, a permitted item, let's say sitting in front of a loaf of bread, In Hebrew, we refer to that as a kikar lechem. And the person says, I consider upon myself this kikar lechem, or I consider this kikar lechem as besar zevach shlomim, as the meat of a shlomim sacrifice. You ask, what's a shlomim sacrifice? So in English translations, it's termed a peace offering. That doesn't tell us too much about what a shlomim is, but in practical terms, if philosophically, of course, it does describe what it is, but in practical terms, a shlomim is a sacrifice that is, first of all, it's considered kachim kalim, it's a low-level sanctity sacrifice. When you sanctify it so you're not allowed to benefit from it, when it's slaughtered and the blood is sprinkled on the altar, so the meat is then something that you are allowed to benefit from. You eat it. That's in contrast to an olah sacrifice, which is completely burnt. So a shlomim sacrifice has a point in time prior to the sprinkling of its blood. It is prohibited. After the sprinkling of the blood, it is permitted. When we say permitted, it means the owner, in addition to the kohanim who get their portion, the owner is entitled to eat from it. Now, Romi Bar Chamo's question regarding the loaf of bread that I deem like a korban shlomim, what is my intention in that statement? Am I paralleling the loaf of bread to the korban shlomim at its origin, meaning before it was slaughtered? Simply, I'm comparing the loaf of bread to the korban shlomim at the point that the shlomim was sanctified. Or, and that's one side of the analysis, or am I paralleling it to the way it is at the end, now, meaning allowed, that you're allowed to eat it, and hence the bread would not become prohibited. If I say that the bread is being parallel to the korban shlomim at its outset, just like the shlomim at its outset is something that I made prohibited through my neder or through my sanctification, I'm now saying that the bread is like that and I would not be allowed to eat the bread. If, however, I'm comparing the bread to the shlomim as it is right now, so there's nothing wrong with the shlomim right now, I'm allowed to eat it. Likewise, the bread, I'd be allowed to eat. We got off the topic of Nazirus there for a little while, so the job that is upon us is to somehow relate our sukya to Rami Bar Chama. So now the Gemara at the top, Mar Zutra Brei Rav Mori Omar, hi. Our discussion with the Nazirus, we had the woman accepting upon herself Nazirus, her friend linking into it, the husband coming along and absolving, and we said that the friend remains prohibited. So we say, this, Hainu Derami Bar Chamo. That means with our sukya having been presented, we can then attempt to resolve Rami Bar Chama's question. The boy Rami Bar Chamo, Hare olai kibesar zevach shlomim mahu. A person says that a loaf of bread or whatever is upon me like the meat of a shlomim sacrifice. What's the result? Kimatvis inish. When a person imposes a vow, when he attaches or parallels an item to something that was sanctified. Beikora matvis, odilma bitzanino matvis. Is he paralleling it to the sanctified item at its outset? Or bitzanino, without getting into the etymology, it means to the sanctified item at its end. Then we had learned the case of the Nazira and the friend. Let us conclude that the hatfosa is to the korban's origin. In other words, I'm saying that I want this loaf of bread to be like the korban when it was initially sanctified. And why do I want to conclude that? Because we found that the friend of the woman, in the case of the Nazirus, she remained Asura, even though the husband of the first woman absolved her of the vow. Why does the friend who had said Vani remain Asura? Because when she attached herself, that's like our case of attaching the bread to the sacrifice, when the friend attached herself to the woman's Nazirus, she was attaching herself to the woman's Nazirus at the very outset. And when we spoke about the husband and his absolution, that's Begis Gai, as we said. We said that's only from the absolution onwards. But the friend's vow, Va'ani, the friend who had said, I too, she was attaching herself or linking herself to the Nazirus vow of the first woman at its origin. So that is what Marzutra Breder of Mori at the top of this Omid is suggesting, that with our Sukya we can conclude Rami Bar Chama's question regarding the Harei Olai Kipsar Zevach Shlomim situation. As we continue, you'll notice Roman numerals 1 and 2. These represent two lushonos, two versions of how to continue in the Gemara. The double underline, we've noted on the side, Havlotas Hahevdel Bein Shnei Lushonos. At this point, we're going to highlight the difference between the two versions. The first version, we've double underlined mi domi, meaning how can you think to conclude Rami Bar Chama's question from our sugya? And the Gemara will tell us that in our sugya, which you can see we've highlighted using a marking, a volcano shape around the word hocha, a few lines from now, here, by the case of the women that vowed, it's clear that the woman who said Va'ani, she had to have attached herself to the origin, to the source, to the beginning. Why? Because you have a case of the original woman's vow having been absolved by the husband. The fact that the Tanaic source tells us that the second woman remains Usur, it's very clear that she was attaching herself to her friend and her vow at the point of origin. However, in the case of Rami Bar Chama's question, the person paralleling the loaf of bread or the heter item to the Besar Shlomim, it's not clear what his intention or what the results should be, because in the case of Besar Shlomim, even though true before the Zrika that's clearly Usur, even after the Zrika, even after the meat becomes mutter for you to eat, it though has upon it restrictions. You can't eat it outside of Yerushalayim. You can't eat it wherever you want. It has sanctity to it. And therefore, if I'm paralleling a loaf of bread to the shlomim meat, it could be that I have in mind the shlomim meat after the Zrikas Adam, but I'm looking at the meat with regard or emphasizing in my mind its sanctified characteristic. There, the restrictions that still exist upon it. So therefore, there is room to think that when I'm paralleling the bread to the shlomim, it's bitsonenot to it as it is, even at the end. And as I said, there's room to consider, to analyze, maybe there still is an element of restriction there. So for our purposes, what Marzutra Breder of Mori was suggesting, that from our sugya with the woman and her Nazira vow,
and the second woman attaching herself and finding that the second woman remains usher, even though the husband annulled it, that doesn't show me with total clarity what the case would be that Romy Bar Chamo had featured with the paralleling to the Psar Zevach Shlomim. That's what Roman numeral number one highlights. Roman numeral number two says, you Rav Zutra was saying, let's conclude, or we can resolve Romy Bar Chama's question from the women and the vows, the Nazirus, yes. And you can see we've double underlined Hainu, the Romy, where the Hainu word appears. Hainu means, yes, this is just like the issue Romy Bar Chama was raising, and let us therefore conclude his question that the woman, when she says Vani, that is, the person when he says that I want the bread to be like the Besar Zevach Shlomim, he must be referring to it, the Shlomim, at its outset. Now let's read that in the Gemara. Mi Domi. Roman numeral 1, as we said, shows us that you can't be so sure as Mar Zutra was that the issue of Romy Bar Chamo, the parallel to Psar Zevach Shlomim, can be resolved from the case of the Nazirus. Hasam Kevon D'Yomar Harei Olai K'Psar Zevach Shlomim. In the case where someone said that he wants this loaf of bread to be upon him like Shlomim meat, even after the blood is sprinkled, motzi ochile bachutz, do you think that you can eat it wherever you want? Mikdash kodesh, it has sanctity to it. You can't eat it bachutz, meaning outside Yerushalayim, just wherever you want. So therefore, there is room to think that when a person parallels the bread to the Psar Zevach Shlomim, he might have in mind the Zevach Shlomim as it is right now, Betzinino, at the end, with its sanctity element still attached to it. Aval Hocha, in the case of the women and the Nazirus, there, if you were to think that the second woman is paralleling her Nazirus to the first woman at the end, the husband already had at that point had absolved the first woman of her vow. So the second woman and the ruling of the Mishnah that the second woman's vow remains intact, we say the second woman is Asura, there it's clear that that second woman had been attaching herself to the first woman's vow at its origin, at Be'ikora. So, with that having been said, we see that the case of Harelai Kibsar Zevach Shlomim isn't so similar to the case of the women and the Nazirus. Ika the Amri, another approach is Hainu the Romy Bar Chamo Vadai. The Tosfos at the top says Ika the Amri Hainu the Romy Bar Chamo Vadai. Ika lemifshat bayad Romy mi Brisa Deliel. Yes, we are able to conclude Romy Bar Chamo's question from the Brisa before. V'ein litchos dechiyazu shebol lechalik b'neim the Vadai domu va'adodi. And don't say what we said in Lashon number 1 in the first version, that there is some distinction. For the not every distinction must be made, and therefore disregard the distinction and rather look at the parallel and can therefore conclude Romy Bar Chamo's question. We indicated before that we were following the Rosh's approach to the Sukkah. The Rosh adds another dimension of understanding. So before we conclude, let us learn the Rosh together, only a section of it, from the beginning. Rav Zutra, Brei, Rav Mori, Omar, Hainu de Rami Barchama, the boy Rami Barchama, Harelai Kipsar Zifei Shlamim, Mahu. Pirush Rabbeinu Tam. The Rosh is quoting from Rabbeinu Tam. We didn't mention earlier, but there's a very long Tosfos that appears that's relevant to this sugya on Chof Beis Amid Aleph, the lower half of the page. There's a very long Tosfos that deals extensively with this particular sugya. But for the time being, we're going to be following the Rosh's presentation of Rabbeinu Tam. The Rav Zutra Bo Liyashev, Rav Zutra's purpose in this Gemara is to resolve the Lo Tikshi Hanoch Tarti Brises Ahadodi. We should not leave our sugya with what would otherwise appear to be a contradiction in Tanaic sources. The Tanaic sources referred to earlier. Umitochkach, and with our resolving of the sources, Tifshot by the Rami Bar Chama. Usfirule the Rav Zutra, the Kulu Tanoi Savri, all Tanoim really hold Baal Merke Okar. Kidemuchuk Breisa Kamaisa, that a Baal, a husband, when he absolves from the very outset. Now, here, what we did not mention earlier, and we did not attempt to reflect this with our markings either, is that Marzutra, contrary to what we said at the end of Omid Aleph, the Gemara had appeared with a resounding conclusion that a Baal Meg is Gaius. According to Marzutra and the Rabbeinu Tam's approach, don't say that. Don't come out with a resounding conclusion that a Baal is Megis Gaius, but rather all Tanoim will agree that a Baal, a husband, uproots from its origin. Kidemuchach Braisa Kamaisa, from the fact that the earlier Tanaic source said Mideinu Mevia Oila Sa'if, that we saw the woman who had vowed to be a Nozir and she became defiled. The husband annulled her vow. She doesn't bring the Olasof. Why is she not bringing the Olasof? Because the vow was uprooted from the outset, and whatever defilement she did was not in violation of a Nazirus. And we also saw in the earlier source that if you have a woman who had vowed to be a Nazira, and she was violating the Naziris, but the husband had been made for it, she doesn't, we saw this at the bottom of Chof Aleph Amud Aleph, she's not subject to lashings. Well, all of these sources indicate that the uprooting is, that is the Baal's Hafora, the absolution is an uprooting from the outset. Fafilu Hachi, Severus Braisa Basraisa, and even so, the last source that we saw at the bottom of Omid Aleph, of Chof Beis Omid Aleph, the Chaverta Asura, the friend who had said, Vani, she remains prohibited. Mishum de Beikora Komatvis. The Afopi, Shehofer Lo Bala. So here's the Chiddush, that even though there's an uprooting of the vow, the friend, when she attached herself to the Nazirus, and maybe this is the major factor, the point of difference, is that here you have a second woman who is expressing her interest to accept upon herself Nazirus. So that even though the first woman's husband uprooted the vow from its source, the second woman has her Nazirus remaining upon herself, because she wasn't speaking for nothing. She had an intention to accept a Nazirus vow, which she did. She did before the husband ever annulled. So, since you're dealing with a second woman, and a personal Nazirus vow, that remains. Even though the husband of the first woman was Mayfair. V'tifshot mehachahal deboy Rami bar Chamo perikam in the Dorim. Let us conclude Rami's question that appears in the first chapter of Maseches Nedarim, Imhoya, Lufon of Boster Zivchei Shlomim, Leachar Zrika, if there was lying in front of a person some meat, Shlomim meat, after the Zrika Sadam, the Omar, Peros Halolu Koze Mahu. And someone said, I want these fruits, we used the example before of a loaf of bread, to be like the meat. The meat that right now is Shlomim meat after the Zrika Sadam, after the blood sprinkling. Mi amrinon biikur kamosha lifnei zrika komafis v'asir. Do we say that the intention of the speaker is to compare the fruits to the meat before the zrika, and the fruits would be asir, would be prohibited? O dilmo b'tzinino komafis kamosha hoya ato liachar zrika shnitztanin eiser v'holachlo komafis. Or is the intention to compare the fruits to the shlomim meat now, after the prohibition has cooled off, so to speak, and is gone, and the fruits would be allowed? Umehocha tifshot to be koro komatvis, from the case involving the women and the vows, let us conclude that the intention of paralleling the fruits to the meat is the meat at its outset, just like the woman who had said vani is paralleling herself to the first woman at her outset when she made the Nazirus vow. So the point that we saw in the Rush was the, let's say, the role of Marzutra, Breder of Mori, in this sukya was actually to present a new look at the sources that we saw before, namely that all the sources would hold that the Baal is Oiker Meikora. And in that sense, Marzutra is then differing with the conclusion the Gemara had reached at the bottom of Chof Beis Omen Aleph, where we had said Shema Mino Baal Megiz Gaius. Before we conclude today's shiur, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.